Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And once again, I've got another amazing, inspiring guest that I'm really jacked up to have on the pod. His name is Ed Rush. But before we get there, let me remind you once again that if you want more info about what's going on with me, about my life, trying to get out there and speak, these days it's harder than ever just because of the quarantine that's had everyone in the planet shut down. But you can see more about what's going on with my speaking gigs. Also, there's a blog I continue to update all the time. I am going to Mount Everest next year. It didn't cancel on me. The way I framed it up, it got postponed. So exactly 1 year, the pod is being done now on the 14th of April. And so I will be over there hiking in 2021. I'm very jacked up to do that. And as always, please go in and give us a ratings and review. It's all about popularity because I want to make sure that everybody on the planet is aware of these podcasts that I do. It's not about me. It's about the very inspirational people that I have on the pod, like this guy today, Ed Rush, who's a former, or not former, he is a CEO consultant, a speaker, an author. And the best part of all this is he's a fighter pilot. So let's welcome in Ed. Ed, how you doing?
Mark Pattison, what's up, man? Hey, good to be on the show. I have to tell you, I know that you are a go-getter. So this morning I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I did 100 sit-ups, 100 pull-ups, 100 push-ups. I went downstairs, ate breakfast that consisted of a bowl of nuts and bolts, a little bit of goat milk in there. And then I went for a 21-mile run in nothing other than my baseball, metal cleats, and an athletic supporter. And I feel like now I'm finally ready to meet with you, the man. I bet your morning routine, by the way, you did more than that. I was just kind of playing around.
Well, I did do more than that because in addition to doing those exact same things, I also threw pine cones into my Seven Summit smoothie, threw a cape on my back, and jumped up in the air. So anyways, not that you have to outdo that.
But I have no pine cones. It's Southern California, man. But maybe palm branches tomorrow, I guess, into the smoothie might work.
Hey, whatever works, man. Just
avocado
as long
peels.
As you're pushing forward, always, you know, reaching for the stars. So, you know, all the things that I was looking, and you're a fighter pilot, the Top Gun program. And I remember back in the day when I was growing up, I had the very good fortune to be recruited by a number of different colleges. One of those was the Air Force Academy. And I knew for me back in those days, I didn't have the maturity to go and really think about not only going to the Air Force Academy, going through basic training, then playing football, but really it's a 9-year commitment because you're committing to 5 years after that to go fly jets and everything. And looking back on it, I mean, I would have loved to have taken that life, but I just wasn't mature enough. I just wanted to go play at a big time football school, University of Washington, and be in a fraternity and do fun kid things at that time. And so that's what I did. But for you, you know, I looked at your background, and there's one thing that, you know, for sure that you have these qualities, which is vision, clarity, and mission. And I wanted to really understand, going back to when you were a kid, you're like, where did that really start to kick in?
Oh man. I mean, for me, mission has been everything. I mean, I've trained myself for the most part to live without regret in just about every area of life, except for this one. My number one goal in life is to fulfill the calling that I feel like God's put me on this earth to do. And so I wake up in the morning with mission on my mind. That's why I think the military was such a good, functionally was such a good place for me. I mean, it wasn't always easy. I failed kindergarten. I don't like admitting that fact, frankly, but I mean, it's just a fact that I wasn't all really the sharpest tool in the shed growing up. I got in trouble quite a bit. But I found my way into the Marine Corps, found my way into the cockpit of the F-18. So something went right. And yeah, mission was really, and still is really, a big part of the driving focus behind my life.
So who was that mentor then, right? Again, when we talk about mission, like, I guess for me, we talk about mentors. I don't think it's ever one person. It's a village, right? It takes a village to raise a kid. And during that village, my dad was certainly a pillar for me. My grandfather was a pillar. And as I kind of kept climbing the ladder, just different people in my life, you know, when I got drafted by the Raiders, you know, Al Davis certainly had an influence on me. My head coach, Don James, later become a Hall of Fame coach for us. But for you, like, who were those pillars that kind of got you where your mindset was, one day I want to fly F-18 and MiGs, all this kind of stuff, these crazy planes?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And it's interesting to think about, especially the way you described it, with the multiple people who interface with your life at any given time. you know, one of the first mentors in my life, and this is crazy when I think about this, was my mom. I was born into a national championship basketball run. My mom is in the Basketball Hall of Fame as a basketball coach. 1972, the year I was born, she was coaching a small Catholic university in Pennsylvania, their girls' basketball team. And they were awful until my mom showed up. And the year she showed up, they went to the national championship. And the next year, they went to the national championship and won. And that was the year she was pregnant with me. She went on to win 3 national championships. They would do basketball games in Philadelphia where they would have 20,000 people watching the women's game. And then the men's game would play after. They'd have 1,500 people sitting there watching the men's game. That's how impactful her little team at Immaculata College was. So it's interesting. You know, I grew up on team buses. I grew up around champions. There were more coaches that came from her teams that went off and coached in Division I women's basketball. It's insane. And so winning was a really important part of my life growing up. And then another mentor of mine was my dad. My dad was a referee in the NBA. By the way, yeah, my mom was a basketball. My dad was a referee in the NBA. And I was awful at basketball. It was not even close to being my sport. I was a baseball player in college, which is fairly ironic. But my dad was my coach, and probably similar to you. I mean, Little League, my first year in Little League, I had this coach that was just the worst coach I had in my life when I was 6 years old. And my dad was standing with a friend of his, another NBA referee, a guy named Daryl Garrison. And he looked at him and he said, "What's the deal with this coach?" And Daryl looks at my dad and says, "That's your fault, because the best coach in this team is standing on the sidelines." And my dad, for the next about 8 years, ended up coaching me and teaching me the importance of teamwork and, you know, hard work and diligence and discipline and the meaning of a good win. And then when I went off to high school, my dad sort of let that go and let my other teachers and trainers coach me. And then I went in the Marine Corps and had this amazing group of mentors, starting with drill instructors who I thought hated me, but I found out later on that they were training me to live. Like, they were teaching me not to die, you know? And then I had flight instructors who I thought hated me. And I found out they didn't hate me. They loved me to the point at which they weren't going to let me make mistakes. And really all those things put together to turn me into a good human being and a good dad and a good husband and a good pilot, you know, and a good speaker. And it was that tribe or that team of people that still are there to this day for me, who I rely on for great ideas and good motivation.
Yeah, I think that when you're talking about team sports, you know, that's something obviously I have a huge affiliation with based on my background. And when you get into team sports, it's really learning the whole idea around discipline, right? And what a lot of people don't understand is about tough love. And tough love can, it's not about being abusive with tough love, but tough love can push people to heights that they never thought they could get to. And at the same time, making sure there's attention to detail and that you're following the rules in a certain way so that you're getting the job done. And you know, when you're talking about getting into as a pilot, right? A lot of times there's just no margin for error. And I can only imagine when you're out there flying around in your Top Gun school and you're in San Diego and you're trying to land on a flipping aircraft carrier, right? So I'm sure you must have had, you know, some scary moments in your time where this happened, where you had to rely on the instincts and the training skills that you'd been given over a period of time.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about flying airplanes, and it's true for life, is it's not so much not making mistakes. Pilots by no means are not flawless. It's just what you do with those mistakes. And I think most pilots would admit that every flight is a constant adjustment. I mean, every little move, when you're dogfighting, for example, you're turning at about 60 degrees per second. Every single move, every twitch requires a second adjustment after that. You know, I'll take you back to, for example, my first night carrier landing. Every pilot in the Marine Corps, the Navy, because we fly off aircraft carriers, at the end of our training, which is usually about 3 years long, we go to the aircraft carrier, do our day carrier landings, and then we go to the carrier again and do our night carrier landings. Well, there's a bunch of countries that land on aircraft carriers, India, China, Japan, just to name a few, England. But the only country that does it at night is the United States of America. We've got 11 to 12 super carriers, that are all around the world at any given time, pretty badass machines, and you have to be able to land on that thing at night. And, you know, landing during the day gets pretty routine. I mean, nothing gets routine around the carrier, but you could define it as routine. Landing at night is nuts. It's like, I don't know why anyone would do that. And what makes it worse is when you do it for the first time in training, you're all alone. Normally you have a trainer in your back seat, but on this particular first try, you're all alone. And so I went to do my first night carrier landing. It was back in 1999. Actually, I remember the exact date, July 25th, 1999. I live in San Diego here now. I was off the coast of San Diego. You can see the ocean from my house right here. I was about 100 miles southwest of here, landing on an aircraft carrier called the USS Stennis, which incidentally is parked right downtown right now. And when we do our landings, we line up behind the aircraft carrier about 15 miles, descend through the clouds to end up at a point about 300 feet above the water and about 3/4 of a mile behind the aircraft carrier to that spot that you've seen on TV or movies where they call the ball. This is where you switch to a visual landing and you take it in and land on the carrier, or hope that you land on the carrier. This particular night, I lined up at 15 miles and it was a beautiful night. The moon was out, the stars were out. Everything was pretty amazing except for one thing, starting at above at about 600 feet above the water and ending at about 1,200 feet above the water was a really thick overcast cloud layer. And that cloud layer would be the source of a pretty significant problem for me that night. It shouldn't have been. I trained for years to land on that carrier at night through the clouds using my instruments on a simulator over and over and over, drilling. But that particular night, as I descended into the clouds at about 250 miles an hour and at about 1,200 feet above the water, a condition came upon me which can only be described as vertigo. If I was to define vertigo in a room like I'm standing right now, vertigo would be blindfolded, spin you around about 20 times and stop. That very dizzy, disoriented feeling, that's vertigo. And vertigo can kill you in an airplane, but in a situation like standing in a room like we are right now, it's just nauseating. And so as I descended into the clouds, what I felt is a gentle rolling sensation to the left. What every pilot does when they feel their airplane turning to the left is you start to go to the right. As I started to go to the right, I looked up at my heads-up display, my primary instrument that tells me if I'm climbing, descending, turning right, or turning left. And according to that instrument, I'm flying perfectly straight and level. Hmm. Now, the sensation now picks up harder to the left as I go to move my airplane to the right. I look up again at my heads-up display, and at least according to that instrument, which I'm pretty sure is broken at this point, I'm flying straight and level. Now, at this point, the rolling sensation picks up so hard that in my mind, what I see is an airplane that is in a tight spiral now in the clouds. At any moment, I expect the clouds to go away, to see the ocean, to slam into the ocean, and at 24 years old, to die in a $40 million airplane on an accident that was totally my fault. And as I go to violently now move my control stick to the right to recover this airplane that I think is in a left-hand spin, I hear this voice in the cockpit. It's not an out loud voice. It's just the voice of training. And that voice said three words, which I had been taught by my instructor, who had been taught by his instructor, who had been taught by her instructor all the way back to the beginning of instrumented flight. And those three words, every pilot's taught these three words. It just goes, trust your instruments. Trust your instruments. That was the voice that I heard in the cockpit. And so in the cockpit, I'm faced with a decision. I can trust myself or I could trust my instruments. I could trust everything I knew to be true that day. I was positive I was in a left-hand turn. Or I could trust my training. And I trusted my training that night. And it made all the difference in the world. I broke out of the clouds at 600 feet, saw the back of the aircraft carrier, realized I'm alive. That felt pretty good. Then I realized I had to land on this thing. That didn't feel all that good. I executed the failing kindergarten version of the landing that night, but it didn't matter. I landed. And as I rolled out of the end of the aircraft carrier, I breathed this big sigh of relief and realized that I was alive. Now, I'd love to tell you I was alive because I was the second coming of Iceman, Val Kilmer from Top Gun. But the truth is I'm alive because of a really great idea taken into implementation. And the truth is I'm alive because of training. You know, we were talking about just the pure discipline of just getting it done. Sometimes training is just nothing more than repetition. And I told in that story over and over and over and over and over again, I drilled and drilled and drilled and had instructors throw every possible emergency scenario at me over and over and over again. And I thought they were just being jerks. I mean, I would get out of the simulator and think, man, that guy must hate me. But what I realized, he didn't hate me. He actually liked me a lot, even maybe to the point of love. And the fact that these guys know, these trainers know, you're going to be in a situation where a single decision can mean the difference between you living or dying. And I took that lesson with me and just realized everything in life is about discipline. The way you live, the way your body works and looks, the way that you do your day, the way that your business operates, the way that people interface with you, the way that you do your work with your clients, the way that you write books and speak, and everything comes down to that and how you're projecting yourself. And the fact is, we live in a culture that's lost that a little bit because we're technologically very comfortable, you know. And but then every once in a while, something comes along, like you and I are stuck in our houses right now with coronavirus. Every once in a while, something comes up and shakes that up, and it's the discipline trained folks who come and rise to the surface all over again, you know.
Now, I love that. I love that story. And there's a lot of parallels in there. I believe that's what JFK Jr. passed away, you know, many years ago now, when he was flying over to Martha's Vineyard and he got vertigo. And just, you know, like you were talking about, he thought his plane was flying this way or that way. I don't think he was instrument rated. But, you know, when you get vertigo, like you said, it's like getting dizzy and you're in a spin. Yeah. And so you don't know what, you know, if you're up or down or sideways or where you are.
Well, and if you, and this is interesting, I don't know anything about, I know about his crash, but I didn't study it from a safety perspective or anything, but I can tell you that when you fly out over the ocean, especially if the ocean's fairly calm, the stars actually reflect off of the ocean and it gives you this parallax that you, for a moment, your brain thinks, man, I must be pointed directly up. And so there's a lot of pilots that actually push their airplanes down thinking that the ocean they're looking at are actually stars. And I don't know if that's what happened to him. The point, though, is that's a good description of what life throws at you about every day. You know, every single day as an entrepreneur, business owner, a person who cares about their career. I mean, if you're out there trying to change the world every single day, life's going to throw you something that makes you feel like you want to throw up for a second. And dude, you have two choices. Roll up your sleeves and push straight through that pain, discomfort, to something great on the other side, or back off and live a life of mediocrity. And the good people that you know that are out there making changes, push through that stuff every single day, man.
Well, look, to me, being average is easy. Anybody can do it. And it's going, like you said, to that extra level, that extra step is the hard work. And the thing about that, when you're talking about, you know, trust your instruments, in my case, you know, playing, going back, just a quick story. I when I got to the University of Washington, I told the story, this first part of the story before, where I was absolutely unprepared and overwhelmed. And it took me years and years and years. And I think the parallel in the story is that if you don't pay attention to detail, you're disciplined about your craft and you train and you train and you train again. The one thing you don't know, there's no certainty that X is going to necessarily equal, you know, Y on the other side. And all I knew, though, is that by training, being on the field, getting bigger, faster, stronger, working the 2-minute clock, that by the time I finally got in to the game, my redshirt junior year, we're playing Michigan, our first home game. I got my opportunity to start, and we get into a battle at home at Husky Stadium. We're down by 14 points going in the fourth quarter with 15 seconds left to go. We tied the game and now we have the ball, and my number got called and we executed everything just perfectly. And they threw a ball to me. I jumped up over the guy, caught it over his head, came down to the back of the end zone, game over. And it was amazing. But again, just like you, if I hadn't trained and trusted my instruments, my instruments are literal, but they're all the things that you have to do to put yourself in the best position of success, then I would have never been there to have that moment. And everybody in life, and that's the whole thing here, Ed, everybody has their moments, right? And with you, it's such a great story about your, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine trying to land on an aircraft carrier. I mean, like, I'll take the day anytime, let alone the night. And then you had this, you know, you throw this variable of having a cloud layer that's right off the ground, basically covering the aircraft carrier. And so you're literally flying in the closet. And now you have to figure out how. And without you trusting your instrument and going through the process and being disciplined and not going out and trying to come up with some whole new thing, you saved your life. For me, it wasn't life and death, but it was just in terms of parallel, And metaphorically speaking, it was the same exact idea and thought process that got you to the other side. And I think that's the thought process on so many people, especially during this quarantine period, where there's an opportunity to learn. And that the hard thing is that we're stuck at home every day, we're being quarantined, and you feel like there's only so much you can do. But in fact, there's a lot you can do.
Yeah, I mean, people right now, the entire world is going in one of two directions. Either it's Netflix and chill, drink a lot and get out of shape, or flat out get better. And, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking about your story, the football story, because I was a Division I athlete, played baseball. I mean, I was an athlete my whole life based on just my birth, really. And I was just thinking through some of the athletic moments, and then I was comparing them as you were talking to some of the military moments. Some of the best growth happens when you're flat out terrified. And I can remember there was always this first practice in every football team I was ever on, which you're not a stranger to, but you know how you wear t-shirts for basically like 3 days. And then the first day you wear pads,
yeah,
you just start crushing each other. And I remember when I was a freshman in high school, showed up at, there's all these seniors there. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. I'm gonna like smash into these guys. But pushing through that terror is what made you catch that ball in that big game. It was, people think, oh man, you must feel a lot of pressure when you're out there on the big stage. No, you don't feel the pressure when you're on the big stage. You feel the pressure when you're getting your nose slammed by a guy that weighs 100 pounds more than you in the first practice.
That's right.
And really, it's interesting, back in the military, I mean, I think about that, the things that happen in the first week of boot camp form the rest of the decisions that you make, the things that happen in the first week of flight training. Because when you're so uncomfortable and when life is just turned completely upside down, it's when all that change happens that just makes the foundation. I mean, my first day at boot camp, I will never forget this. The morning of my first day at boot camp, we were just doing some medical in processing. It's before they start yelling at you, basically. I was talking to this guy who was in my platoon. I just met him because we were just showed up from two different places in the world. And I remember his name is Wolonsky. We only knew each other's last name. So Wolonsky and I are sitting there and I said, so what's the deal? What brings you here? And he goes, oh, I was actually at boot camp last summer. I was in training for 5 weeks and then I broke my toe and I had to come back this year. I got out processed and then I applied to come back this year. So I stored that one away. That night we met our drill sergeant, you know, and then they start screaming at you. And I remember thinking, I don't know what it was. I went to boot camp between my junior and senior year in college during that summer. And I remember thinking, what the hell did you just do? Like, why did you, I couldn't even remember. Why did I want to be in the Marine Corps? Yeah. And I'm getting yelled at and we're trying to clean things and stuff's flying all over the place. And they purposely make it very stressful, as you can imagine. And I remember I ran into the bathroom because I needed to get something. And I was in these little flip-flops that you wear, little shower shoes. And as I ran into the bathroom to get something, I looked at the wall and I looked at my toe. And then I looked at the wall again and I thought, you know what? If I kick this wall as hard as I can right now, I can break my toe. And if I break my toe, I can get out of boot camp. And if I get out of boot camp, I can have my summer. Shoot, 3 days from now, I'll be sitting on the beach with my boys drinking Natural Light. Yep. And I stood there and looked at that wall. Now, in real life, it was probably about 4 seconds, but in my memory, it was about 5 minutes. And then I just paused for a moment. And I said, you know what? I could break my toe anytime I want to, but what I can't do is find out what happens in day two at Marine Corps boot camp. So I decided I'm going to break my toe the next night. Next night, I'm standing there in front of the wall. Man, I could break my toe tonight, but I don't know what's going to happen. I can't find out what's happening day three. And I probably did that for about 7 straight nights. And then I never thought about breaking my toe ever again. Ended up graduating first in my platoon, going on to be a pilot, going on to fly in combat, have all this incredible career. And it comes back to the wall, you know? And so it's those moments. So as you're listening to this show with Mark and I, you have to remember, we live in a culture right now that prioritizes comfort over almost anything. And that prioritization of comfort has killed cultures off the face of the earth. It's the pressure, it's the squeezing that makes you great. And so if you're feeling uncomfortable and you're not sure where your money's going to come through from, or you're not sure where your next client's going to be, or you're trying to figure out how to be a speaker or an author, or you're trying to figure out how to build a business or raise a team or start a company or get a new job, well, welcome to the real world, man, because this is awesome. The more discomfort you're feeling right now, the bigger the win's going to be on the other side, you know?
Stepping into the fear, right? We talked about this last week on your pod, and it was a lot of fun. And it's actually, if you're trying to figure out what to step into, start really by trying to figure out what you are most uncomfortable with. And then that is the draw that you should go to. And, you know, there's nothing great that's ever been achieved without a lot of hard work, a lot of discipline. Because when you do make it to the other side and you're saying to yourself, I didn't break my toe, I didn't take the easy way out, I made it through training camp, and then something great happens, like what happened to you of being a not only did you graduate, but then you ultimately became a number one instructor for the TUPGON program, you have that satisfaction of that you went through the war, you understood what that was all about, that sweat, that equity that you now can apply towards other things in life, which you've done a great job of transitioning from the military into other things in life.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, but again, back to your game, Washington, Michigan game, that catching that ball wasn't hard. All the stuff leading up to it was, you know, same with me. Flying in combat, frankly, was one of the, it was as easy of a flying mission as I had done, because we had trained, you know, we had trained to fly and fight against the biggest and baddest airplanes in the world. We had trained to fly and fight against the biggest and baddest surface to air systems in the world. I'm talking about missiles that can reach out over 100 miles. I mean, I'm talking about airplanes that can fly faster than the F-18, fly higher, shoot missiles farther. We trained to the worst case scenario so that when we showed up in Iraq, dude, when I was in Iraq, there was nobody. There was no airplanes left. They were all out in the sand. There were no surface-to-air missile systems left. We killed those in about 3 days. We had pretty much domination of the skies. And the combat mission, which should have been my dangerous, by the way, that's when people are trying to shoot at you. That turned out to be some of the easiest flying I did because the training was a lot harder. You know, it's like, yeah. It's you wouldn't think about it that way, because when you watch the movies, it seems like that's the hard part, but it's not. Actually, the hard part is all that stuff that's happening early on.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking in my brain right now, going back to the movie Top Gun and Tom Cruise, and he graduates, and then the next thing, like 24 hours later, they're out in the Indian Ocean, and this mission critical combat is required. And, you know, again, it's like all things. It's just your best is required when those situations come up, and then you have to perform. And so I'm sure you did. You were probably super overqualified. Let's transition a little bit. So now you come out of the military, and I equate it just a little bit like when I came out of the NFL, in terms of you've been trained to do one thing your entire life. You've been doing the same thing for 11 years from 1996 to 2002. And now you're like in this gray zone of like, what do I do? Like, where do I go? And I think, and we'll get into this, but some of the discipline that you learned through your years prior being in the military, of discipline, of vision, of clarity, of mission, all those things that we talked about earlier, have to now start to kick in. How did you make that transition?
So in the biggest ironical fashion in the world, most fighter pilots end up flying for the airlines. It's easily one of the strangest transitions I could imagine. You have these guys and gals who are tip of the spear, trained at the super high level, massive reactions, incredible discipline and training, and then they go off and basically fly a bus for the next 20 years.
Yep.
And I don't mean to be disparaging about that, but I'll just tell you, a lot of thanks goes to my wife. I was sitting on the couch. I was getting out of the Marine Corps back in 2006, and I was sitting on the couch, and I had already put in applications for UPS and FedEx, and some other airlines were on the way to try to get an airline job, because that's basically what everybody did. And in the middle of a movie, my wife and I were watching, she stops the movie and she looks at me and she goes, is this really what you want to do? And I had actually never thought about that question until she asked me, and I go, actually, no, I don't even know what, why am I, you know, I mean, I'm not kidding you. It was that quick that I realized that's not what I want to do. And so it was at this point, I was trying to figure out like what was I going to do? So I tried looking at potentially being a professional speaker, and I didn't do that at first, but I ended up doing it later on, which we can talk a little bit about. But what I ended up doing was, on a whim, I wrote a book called Future Ace. And the book was about how to be a pilot. It was for kids who were 18 to 25 years old who wanted to learn how to be a pilot and go into the military. And I did was write the book as though I was sitting next to somebody and just giving him or her all of my advice. I put that book online. It was after I was still in the military. After a trip to Japan, I put that book online. My first copy, I'll never forget this, I sold it for $14. I thought I'd just made $1 million. It felt that good. And I'm like, we're going out to dinner, babes. Got this book sold for like 14 bucks. And that little book ended up becoming a business that grew within about a year and a half into a six-figure online business. I had no idea that you could take information and put it on the internet and offer it at a reasonable price. And I mean, I had at one point, I had over 300 people in a $30 a month online membership where I was just teaching and training these folks to go into the military. That was my first foray into business. In the midst of that, I learned about teams. I learned about mentors again. I learned about how to communicate effectively. I mean, you look, if you want somebody to invest in something, you have to be able to speak in a way that affects them and shows them that you can help change their lives, you know? And so I did that. Right after that, my dad, the basketball referee, I sat down with my dad. I said, look, you and I need to do this program for basketball referees. He and I started this program called Court Club, which still exists to this very day. We have over 700 people in a membership, monthly membership, same kind of deal, 30 bucks a month. And so I really, it was so cool because I came out of the Marine Corps and I really essentially got paid to learn how to deliver value, because fundamentally businesses do two things really well. A great business solves problems and delivers value over and against when someone pays you. So if somebody pays you $100, you need to deliver them $200 worth of value. Somebody pays you $50,000, you need to deliver them $100,000 worth of value over and against what someone pays you. And really what I did was learn the first few years, I just got to learn, hey, here's how you communicate effectively and here's how you deliver great value. And then from that, the rest of the story is just, I just started telling people what I was doing. People started hiring me to come into their companies and help them. And 440 one-on-one consulting clients later, I'm still helping businesses. Really, fundamentally, that's what I do with almost all of my time. I speak and help businesses. Those other companies I just mentioned still happen behind the scenes, but that's the real interesting growth. And it all started with that first fundamental principle, which is understanding what is the problem to solve and how to over-deliver.
I think the other important lesson, at least for me, is not going into something that you have to have every single thing figured out, right? There's going to be a lot of green lights, but there's probably going to be a lot of red lights and there's going to be some yellow, and you just got to figure out how you're going to navigate and get through those things and just push on and jump, right?
So I've been ready, fire, aim my whole life. So I always equate this to a missile. For example, if you take a Sidewinder missile, which is the one that sits on the wingtips of an F-18, when you shoot a missile off of an airplane, yep. Let's say you're shooting at a MiG-29. It's an airplane I got to fight in a dogfight in training against the MiG-29 pilot. If you're shooting a MiG-29, let's say they're 2 miles away. Well, every missile first comes off of an airplane and it doesn't turn at all for usually about 300 yards. It just goes completely straight. And by the way, the reason for that is because we buy missiles from the lowest bidder. Okay. So yeah. We don't want it to, you know, turn. So it goes straight. And when the missile opens up its tracking system, inevitably the airplane that it's tracking has already moved. So the missile makes a big correction. So you always see the missile come straight and then make some huge turn.
Yep.
But it always overcorrects. Every missile is designed by its coding to overcorrect. It actually pulls lead ahead of the target and then it begins to turn again. And so when you watch a Sidewinder missile, it actually moves. It's always turning on its way to the target, making smaller and smaller corrections as it gets closer, but it's always turning. Not to mention the fact that the airplane that you shot it at is probably turning too. So it's got these new adjustments to make. Well, look, yep. In business, in life, in achieving your goals, two things happen. Number one, you never start the right way. You always start like some direction on the way, but it's never the right way. The second thing is the target begins to move, you know? So simultaneous to that. So I don't know any entrepreneurs who can look back 10 years and see anything but a zigzag. It's one of the reasons why being married to an entrepreneur is really difficult, because you're like, life completely changes and the market changes. And then all of a sudden, like, there's this virus out of nowhere, you know, and you're like, wait a second. I didn't plan for this. And so things change and you're constantly making all of these adjustments. And so that first business, what I learned fundamentally, and this is a business tip, but I'm going to make a bigger tip about it. What I fundamentally learned is I was constantly making adjustments to my message, to my market. I was always tweaking the way that I was communicating things. And at certain points, I was making big rudder adjustments to different markets. Like when I went from that one business to the other business. Well, in life, it's basically the exact same thing. You're constantly making these little tiny adjustments and these little tweaks. And so when we talk about discipline, sometimes people think when we talk about discipline that we're saying you do the same thing every day, basically your whole life. That's not even close to being true. Like if you're training, I don't know anything barely about mountain climbing, Mark, but I know you do. Like when you're training, I guarantee you it's not the same. You're adding and you're adjusting and you're working on some new skills and you're upgrading to something. That's what you're continually doing. And yeah, as fighter pilots, we're doing that, constantly adjusting. As entrepreneurs, we're doing that, constantly adjusting. As athletes, constantly adjusting. That's life, man. It's just a constant, never-ending adjustment. And once the moment you have it figured out, some virus comes across the ocean from China and changes everything. You got to figure out all, you know, I mean,
yeah. I mean, that's called a pivot, right? And we were having this conversation earlier today with another conference call that I was on. And, you know, we were talking about, think about some of the companies that have had to pivot that didn't survive. So we were talking about Uber has basically replaced the taxi business, right? A push of a button. We're talking about Kodak which is now completely disappeared, has been overtaken by smartphones, right? Because everybody has a camera and you can print on your own printer. You don't need to take it in, and Kodak doesn't need to develop, but they didn't pivot, right? We're talking about Sports Illustrated, who I work for, the way it used to be, non-digital, all paper, but the newspaper business is crashing. And so we came in with our digital team and we've done a complete pivot with that company and taken it in a whole new direction. So you were talking about market conditions before with CEOs, and then you transitioned a little bit about the mountains. And so I'd call those mountain conditions, right? Because one day, you know, whenever I go up, I get abused about this all the time. I'm always carrying a backpack. And in that backpack, it's got all the things I never think are going to happen. It's a hot day, but I've got a down jacket. I've got extra water. I've got extra protein bars. I've got my gloves. I've got a variety of things that I know that I've been in so many different times when you think it's going one way and then something else happens in that exact same moment. It's the people that are prepared, which is what we're talking about right now, that survive and can get to the other side.
Yeah. I mean, you have, so in the history of cultures, let's talk about this moment that we're in right now where we have this situation where we have a virus that's hit the whole world.
Yep.
Look, there's two ways to go on this one. And I mean this. And by the way, I don't mean to take away from anyone who's suffered from this at all. But I'm going to tell you, there's two ways. You can survive or you can thrive. Boom. That's it. You can hunker down and try just to survive, or you can go, you know what? This is the opportunity that I've been waiting for, and to survive or to thrive. Look, Amazon just hired 75,000 new people. That's a company that just hired 75,000 new. Look, you don't hire 75,000 new people unless you are growing. Whole Foods, which Amazon bought, exploding. Yep. Food delivery, boom, exploding. Airlines, not so much. Okay, so the point is, you can choose what side of the cash register that you want to stand on. It's totally up to you. And I will tell you that what this virus has done, nothing more than accelerated the changes that are happening in our world. So for example, the car industry right now the US car industry is on its last leg. Yep. That's not because of coronavirus. That's been happening for 5 years now. It's just coronavirus is accelerating that, right? We have a certain sectors of our banking industry that are on their last leg. That's been happening for 5 years. Coronavirus is accelerating. So accept these pressure times. Remember I was talking about boot camp. Accept these pressure times as times of massive reinvention, massive evolution, if you want to use that term, to create the kind of change and be the kind of person that you want to be. I mean, you and I did this, Mark. I went as soon as this thing hit, I started live streaming every single day for 1 hour out of my studio that I'm sitting in right now. Every single day, new guest, new topic, boom, live streaming. Because fundamentally, I'm a communicator. There's no events for me to go speak at right now. So, hey, I'm going to start my own, you know? And I've grown my list. I've grown my following. I've gotten thousands of new people on my email list. But it's all a factor of just adjust and do something new. And you go back to your question, just the live streaming thing. I had barely an idea how to do that. And you know how I figured it out? I pushed the go live button. And I started talking right into this camera that I'm looking at you right now to talk through without much else. And everything else, man, I figured out along the way. So ready? Fire, aim, fire, aim, fire, aim, fire, aim, fire, aim, fire, aim, and eventually you're going to hit your target.
Yeah, love that, love that. When you go out and when the markets ultimately open back up and people are social gathering, not social distancing, what's your core message when you go and you talk to audiences?
Yeah, I mean, three things. Really, I work mostly with entrepreneurs, and that's who I spend about 98% of my time with. I do speak occasionally to corporations and do keynote speeches where I share some of the success principles. But 98% of the time I work with entrepreneurs. And when I work with entrepreneurs, it's three things, and fundamentally three things only. Number one, I help people grow their income. Number two, grow their impact. Number three, increase the vitality of their lifestyle. And the only reason I put those three, and they're not in any particular order, is when I ask entrepreneurs, hey, what are your goals? If they give me 10 goals, I can put all 10 in those categories, just those three: income, impact, lifestyle. Most entrepreneurs look at the middle one, really do have a desire to change the world with their message, service, product. Most entrepreneurs really, really do want to grow their income, because the fact is, if you don't have money, you wake up in the morning thinking about money. If you do have money, you wake up in the morning thinking about changing the world. And then most entrepreneurs want to build their business around their life and not the other way around. So everything that I do in my business is arced around those three things: income, impact, lifestyle. And then all of my services and products and events, you know, I have an event to teach speakers how to communicate more effectively. I've got an event to teach consultants how to get paid well for their ideas and their time. I've got events to teach people how to write books and share their message. So all those things are around the idea of impact, income, impact, lifestyle.
Rounding third base here, what's probably the single most... Well, before I ask you the question, let me take a step back. And you know, as I look at your life, you know, you had these great mentors growing up, with the exception of failing kindergarten. And then, you know, you got into high school, and then you decided to go into the military, and ultimately became this rock star, you know, fighter pilot. I'm imagining, you know, Tom Cruise and that whole gang, and down the beach.
It was exactly like that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're playing volleyball every day, right? and then you transition out of that. Your wife, you know, stops the TV and she says, is this really what you want to do? And then started this whole course towards writing books. And out of the writing books became speaking and consulting with different companies. What is the one most challenging thing that you've had to encounter as you've gained these different little success bumps along the way?
Me? I mean, I would say 90% of the problems and challenges I faced started right up inside my brain. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I teach this stuff. I mean, I teach people how to dominate their thoughts, how to achieve total mind control, how to focus on things that are positive, grow their business. But 90%, Mark, it's crazy. 90% of the challenges that I've had or overcame started right in my brain. It started with a way of thinking. So let me give you an example. I've never been particularly good at leading teams. It's just not something that I like to do. I prefer to just sit at my office and work or think or write or be up on stage communicating. Teams, not a thing that I do. And so for years, I've had a revolving door of people that I've worked with who were just okay. And they were just okay because they weren't led well, frankly. It wasn't their fault. It was my fault. And so one day I realized, hey, what's this thing that you keep telling yourself about I'm not good at teams? I mean, for years, 8 years straight, I would tell people, hey, I'm not very good with teams and not very good with teams. Well, part of the reason I wasn't very good with teams is because I kept telling myself I'm not very good at teams. Like, what kind of talk is that? And so I literally flipped it around and I'm like, hey, I'm really good with teams. I am a good, effective leader. And so all of a sudden, I started giving people very clear instructions. I started following up with folks and holding their feet to the fire. I started to realize if I wake up in the morning and I'm thinking about a team member that hasn't achieved the objectives that I want them to achieve, it's time to get on the phone now. I used to push that phone call off like months, procrastinate on it. I go, hey, I want to talk to you about this. Let's chat it through. Usually there's some misunderstanding between the both of us. Bam, they're back into it. And so that's just one example of many. My point, though, is it always starts with a way of thinking. Like I used to tell myself, I'm not very good with remembering names. And then one day I'm like, I have a good memory. I can remember all kinds of stuff that like I read 3 years ago and then I bring it back up in a talk. Why do I think that I'm bad? Well, I'm bad at names because I told myself I'm not very good at names. And one day I just said, I'm great at remembering names. I can remember that guy's name over there from three events ago, 3 years ago, you know? So my point is the biggest obstacles were self-made. And truthfully, the biggest obstacles to this same day are self-made. It's constantly this onion that I'm trying to unpeel about the simple belief system, the way that you think about yourself is.
I totally agree. Yeah. It's basically, there's two things in there. There's one, there's mindset, and there's two, self-prophecy. Right. And there's just, if you tell yourself you're dumb or you're not smart or you have a bad memory or you're not a very good athlete, that's who you're going to be. And it's just the opposite of that, of waking up every day and getting after that. I personally think that part of that formula to success, to changing that mindset, is not only writing those things down, but also filling your head full of other people with positive messages that go in. So, you know, we talked about your morning routine. You ate some nuts and bolts, and you did 100 push-ups, 100 sit-ups, and you did whatever else. And I went through my crazy, you know, workout this morning, and then I ran 4 miles. I came back and ate a bunch of pine cones and my Seven Summit smoothie. But when I was out on my four-mile run, the entire time I was listening to positive messages on a podcast, and I listened to a bunch of people on the pod. But it's just a great way to learn and of other inspirational people. And it can be meditation or it can be a book. It doesn't have to be my way, but I think you have to fill your mind, you know, junk in, junk out, good stuff in, good stuff out.
No
and
question.
That ultimately unlocks the key to success.
Yeah. Two quick thoughts on that. If we have time.
Yeah.
We have time.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
So the first one is a concept that I call purposeful intake, which is what you just described. I put a lot in, but my simple rule is everything that I put in front of myself is there on purpose. That means music, for real, down to the song. That means podcasts. That means books, the kind of books that I'm reading. Yep. Even if it's a fiction book, it's chosen there on purpose. It comes down to the people that I'm in front of. So purposeful intake, you would, as a hardcore athlete, you put good things in your body. As a hardcore entrepreneur, business owner, career-minded person, you need to put good things in your brain. And so that's the first one, is purposeful intake. And then, you know, kind of looping back, since you said coming around third, going back to mentors. I mean, just having a small handful, and I mean small, I'm talking like two or three people in your life that can speak truth to you. And here's what I mean by truth. These are people who know who you are, but they know where you're going. And they know the Ed Rush that's coming out, not the current one. So there's a guy in my life, he's in his 80s. He was a mentor to my dad. He's now a person that I consider a mentor. And I'm in the middle, you know, a little bit about this, Mark, but I'm in the middle of trying to launch a movement right now to grow leaders in the United States to take over our government. It's nonpartisan. It's not Republican or Democrat. It's literally not a party. It's a growth of trying to get great entrepreneurial minds into places of leadership and get the stagnation out. And growing something like that is very big, and it takes a lot of effort, and you meet a lot of roadblocks, because the truth is there's a lot of obstacles along the way. And it's little things like this guy, this mentor of mine, sent me an article about Abraham Lincoln. And all he wrote at the top of it was, I see a lot of Abraham Lincoln in you, best. His name's George, best George. Boom, send me the article. And I'm telling you, that one sentence, I could go for weeks on that. So just having positive people in your life that know, not necessarily who aren't talking about you now, but are talking about the future you, the person that you're becoming, is incredibly powerful.
Awesome. I love that. Where can people find you, Ed?
Best place for me, I'll give you two websites. EdRush.com is home plate for me. When you go there, you can jump on there and subscribe to a series I'm doing right now called Ed Talks Live. These are my daily shows. At least they're daily during coronavirus bunker time. In fact, I had episode 12, man. I had this amazing guy who used to play in the NFL, climbing 6 of the 7 summits, senior vice president at Sports Illustrated, Mark Pattison. So at the very least, you need to go watch episode 12. But edrush.com is one. And then the other website I'll give you, just as easy as the first one, frankly, it's the easiest website you'll remember, is edrushbook.com. And at edrushbook.com, you'll get right to my 21-day miracle. That's my most popular book by far. It was Amazon's number one business book. Sold almost 30,000 copies of that bad boy. And it's a book about changing your life in rapid time. So those are the two resources, edrush.com and edrushbook.com. Thanks for asking, man.
Yeah, well, look, everybody needs a miracle, right? And especially right now, it's a major challenging time that we're all going through. And even if things are going okay, I mean, it's affecting so many people. There's the domino effect, and you know, our hearts go out to those. And so, I think, you know, if there's, again, using this as an opportunity, whether it's the miracle book or it's going online, trying to figure it out, surrounding yourself with mentors, as Ed was just talking about. Filling your brain full of positive messages, figure it out, reach out. I'm always here. Ed's always around. Love to chat with people. So, you know, I just really appreciate you sharing all your wisdom and your years of all these great things you've been doing, and hope to hear from you in the future. Love to have you back on the pod.
Dude, it's an honor to be on the show. I have had a blast with the content that you've been providing. I think, what is it, like 150 some episodes already on this thing? So yeah. It's a real honor to be here, Mark. Thanks for inviting me, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, there he is, Ed Rush. Thank you so much.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.